Raya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Tati Jana Dalada Girivara Dari. Kati Jana Dalada Girivara Dari. Yashoda Nanda 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 Jamuna Tira Dana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Tati Jana Dalada Girivara Dari. Yashoda Nanda 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 Jamuna Tira Dana Chari. Jamuna Tira Dana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jayam Vishwapad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Stutana Sata Shri Srinad, His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnavana Ki, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakura Ki, Granthraj Srinad Bhagavatam Ki, Nitya Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the Assembled of Devotees, all glories to the Assembled of Devotees, all glories to the Assembled of Devotees, all glories to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're starting a new chapter today, chapter 4, The Atrocities of King Kamsa. And I'll read the summary at the beginning and then we'll do verse 1. This chapter describes how Kamsa, following the advice of his demoniac friends, considered the persecution of small children to be very diplomatic. After Vasudeva bound himself with iron shackles as before, all the doors of the prison house closed by the influence of Yogamaya, who then began crying as a newborn child. This crying awakened the doorkeepers, who immediately informed Kamsa that a child had been born to Devaki. Upon hearing this news, Kamsa appeared with great force in the maternity room, and in spite of Devaki's pleas that the child be saved, the demon forcibly snatched the child from Devaki's hands and dashed the child against a rock. Unfortunately for Kamsa, however, the newborn child slipped away from his hands, rose above his head, and appeared as the eight-armed form of Durga. Durga then told Kamsa, "The enemy you contemplate has taken birth somewhere else. Therefore, your plan to persecute all the children will prove futile." According to the prophecy, the eighth child of Devaki would kill Kamsa, and therefore, when Kamsa saw that the eighth child was a female, and heard that his so-called enemy had taken birth elsewhere, he was struck with wonder. He decided to release Devaki and Vasudev, and he admitted before them the wrongdoings of his atrocities. Falling at the feet of Devaki and Vasudev, he begged their pardon and tried to convince them that because the events that had taken place were destined to happen, they should not be unhappy for his having killed so many of their children. Devaki and Vasudev, being naturally very pious, immediately excused Kamsa for his atrocities, and Kamsa, after seeing that his sister and brother-in-law were happy, returned to his home. After the night passed, however, Kamsa called for his ministers and informed them of all that had happened. The ministers, who were all demons, advised Kamsa that because his enemy had already taken birth somewhere else, all the children born within the past 10 days in the villages within Kamsa's kingdom should be killed. Although the demigods always fear Kamsa, they should not be treated leniently. Since they were enemies, Kamsa should try his best to uproot their existence. The demoniac ministers further advised that Kamsa and the demons continue their enmity towards Vishnu, because Vishnu is the original person amongst all the demigods. The Brahmins, the cows, the Vedas, austerity, truthfulness, control of the senses and mind, faithfulness, and mercy are among the different parts of the body of Vishnu, who is the origin of all the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Therefore, the ministers advise the demigods, the saintly persons, the cows, and the brahmanas should be systematically persecuted. Strongly advised in this way by his friends, the demoniac ministers of Kamsa approved of their instructions and considered it beneficial to be envious of the brahmanas. Following Kamsa's orders, therefore, the demons began committing their atrocities all over Brajabhumi. Okay, text 1. Shishukovacha Bahiranta Puradvara Sarva Purvavad Avrita Tato bala dvanim shrutva Grihapala samutita Shishukavacha Bahiranta puradvara Sarva-purva-vadavrita Tato-bala-dvanim-shrutva Griha-pala-samuttita Shishukuvacha Bahiranta Purada Dvara Sarva Purva Vadavita Chato Bala Dvanim Sritva Griha Pala Samutita. Sada Purva Bhadavita Tato Bala Dvanim Sritva Griha Pala Samutita Bahiranta Puradvara Sada Purva Bhadavita Riha Pala Samutita Bahiranta Puradvara Sarva Purva Bhadavita Tato Bala Dvanishutva Griha Pala Samutita Bahiranta Puradvara Sarva Purva Bhadavita Bala Dvanim Sritva Griha Pala Samutitaha Bahiranta Puradvara Sarva Purva Bhadavita Tato Bala Dvanim Sritva Samudita Shishukavacha Shishukadev Goswami said Bahi Anta Puradvara. The doors inside and outside the house. Sarva All Purvavat like before. Avrita, closed. Tata, thereafter. Bala Dvanim, the cry of the newborn child. Shrutva, hearing. Griha Pala, all the inhabitants of the house, especially the doorman. Samutita, awakened. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami continued, my dear King Parikshit, the doors inside and outside the house closed as before. Thereafter, the inhabitants of the house, especially the watchmen, heard the crying of the newborn child and thus awakened from their beds. Purport. The activities of Yoga Maya are distinctly visible in this chapter, in which Devaki and Vasudev excuse Kamsa for his many devious, atrocious activities, and Kamsa becomes repentant and falls at their feet. Before the awakening of the watchmen and the others in the prison house, many other things had happened. Krishna was born and transferred to the home of Yashoda and Gokul. The strong doors opened and again closed, and Vasudev resumed his former condition of being shackled. The watchmen, however, could not understand all this. They awakened only when they heard the crying of the newborn child, Yogamaya. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has remarked that the watchmen were just like dogs. At night, the dogs in the street act like watchmen. If one dog barks, many other dogs immediately follow it by barking. Although the street dogs are not appointed by anyone to act as watchmen, they think they are responsible for protecting the neighborhood, and as soon as someone unknown enters it, they all begin to bark. Both Yogamaya and Mahamaya act in all material activities, prakrite kriyamanani guna karmani sarvasha. But although the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead acts under the Supreme Lord's direction, mayaya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam, dog-like watchmen, such as politicians and diplomats, think that they are protecting their neighborhoods from the dangers of the outside world. These are the actions of maya. But one who surrenders to Krishna is relieved of the protection offered by the dogs and dog-like guardians of this material world. Amagina timirandasya jananyana salakaya chakshin mitamyana tasmai shigurave namaha. So now we're getting to the point where the Supreme Lord now has been born and taken to Vrindavan. And Kamsa will start his preaching to Vasudeva and Devaki, because he starts to feel bad. And here it's explained that this is yoga maya. Why would Kamsa ever feel bad about what he's done? He's taken all these babies and smashed them to the ground. I mean, it's like a serial killer or something. And someone like that doesn't have the feelings to feel bad. But this is how Yogamaya works, to make the pastimes of Krishna unfold. She covers everyone in different ways. Just like I was thinking that Devaki and Vasudev, even, they're forgiving Kamsa. He's just killed all of their children. And how difficult it is. You know, if someone does something wrong to you, some small thing, even a big thing, it takes a lot to be forgiving, to forgive that person, and to actually say, that's all right, you know, I forgive you, and to actually feel that in one's heart. And here, Devaki and Vasudev were so magnanimous that they immediately said to Kamsa, it's all right, that's okay, we can forget all that past. But they're devotees, and they understand that all of this is the will of the Lord. Kamsa was preaching that this is all predestined. You know, this was supposed to happen. I was just an instrument being made to do all these things. So it's not really my fault. But Vasudev and Devaki realized this is actually Krishna's arrangement. And this is all his arrangement to perform his pastimes in Vrindavan. And Yogamaya in Vrindavan during the pastimes of the Lord is always there. She's in charge of making all these pastimes happen. We see that without her, how would Mother Yashoda ever not recognize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Here he is lifting up hills to protect everyone, killing these huge demons, sucking Putana's breast, and she becomes this huge demon and falls down, and there he is playing on her body. And still, Mother Yashoda is thinking, oh, I have to protect Krishna. Let's do these mantras and sprinkle urine of the cow on Krishna just to protect him from all these demons that keep coming to Vrindavan. So in this way, they're covered by this illusion. The cowherd boys, they'll jump on Krishna's back when they defeat him. They'll fight with him. They'll tell him, oh, we'll defeat you. You're kind of just such a weakling. We're so strong. We have Balaram on our side. You'll lose. How could they do that if they saw Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So in that way, Durga, as Yogamaya, acts as the covering potency for those residents in the Braj Bhumi, or even in the whole of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's kingdom. But when in the material world, she takes on the qualities of Durga Devi, of Mahamaya. And she's also a covering potency. But she covers the living entity to understand that, yes, I'm this body, I'm the supreme controller. Like Prabhupada said here, that, you know, these diplomats and politicians, they think that they are protecting their countries. They are protecting their neighborhoods. Prabhupada said, when you go into the, you know, you're coming through customs, they're all barking there. Ah, what are you doing here? Why have you come? When are you leaving? Let me see your passport. There's always barking, just like the dogs. So they're thinking, they're covered by this Maya, thinking that I am the controller. I can throw this person out. I can stop this person coming. I am controlling. But as we see that nothing happens without the Supreme Lord's protection. So I was reading this Brahma Samhita. It's a really nice verse describing Durga Devi. And I wanted to share it because it's really wonderful. Shri sti sti pralaya sanana shakti reka chayeva yasya bhuvanani bibharti durga ichana rupam api yasya chate sate sa govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. The external potency, Maya, who is of the nature of the shadow of the chit potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving, and destroying agency of this mundane world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in accordance with whose will Durga conducts herself. And the purport is really nice, because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains exactly how she controls this material world. That's it. The world in which Brahma takes his stand and hymns the Lord of Gokula is Devidam, consisting of the 14 worlds, and Durga is its presiding deity. She is 10-armed, representing the 10-fold fruit of activities. She rides on the lion, representing her heroic prowess. She tramples down Mahishasura, representing the subduer of vices. She is the mother of two sons, Kartikeya and Ganesh, representing beauty and success. She is placed between Lakshmi and Saraswati, representing mundane opulence and mundane knowledge. She is armed with 20 weapons, representing the various pious activities enjoined by the Vedas for suppressing vices. When I read that, I was wondering, why does she, her weapons, which she keeps the materialistic persons within this material world, why are they the pious activities in the Vedas? And then suddenly it came to me that those are things that keep us within this material world. Doing pious activities keeps one, because we're wanting the results of those pious activities to enjoy. So those things keep one in this material world. She holds a snake representing beauty of destructive time. Such is Durga, possessing all these manifold forms. Durga is possessed of Durga, which means a prison house. When jivas begotten of the marginal potency forget the service of Krishna, they are confined in the mundane prison house, the citadel of Durga. The wheel of karma is the instrument of punishment at this place. The work of purifying these penalized jivas is the duty devolved upon Durga. She is incessantly engaged in discharging the same by the will of Govinda. When luckily the forgetfulness of Govinda on the part of imprisoned jivas is remarked by them, by coming in contact with self-realized souls, and their natural aptitude for the loving service of Krishna is aroused, Durga herself then becomes the agency of their deliverance by the will of Govinda. So it behooves everyone to obtain the guileless grace of Durga, the mistress of this prison house, by propitiating her with the selfless service of Krishna. The boons received from Durga in the shape of wealth, property, recovery from illness, of wife and sons, should be realized as the deluding kindness of Durga. The mundane physical jubilations of Daksha Mahavidya, the 10 goddesses of fortune of Durga, are elaborated for the delusion of the fettered souls of this world. Jiva is a spiritual atomic part of Krishna. When he forgets his service of Krishna, he is at once deflected by the attracting power of Maya into this world, who throws him into the whirlpool of mundane fruitive activity by confining him in a gross body constituted by the five material elements, their five attributes, their 11 senses, resembling the garb of a prisoner. So this body is our prison garb, our stripes, like the old prisoners used to wear. And our only release is by the grace of the pure devotees. And they come here just to release us from this Mahamaya and give us this potency of Yogamaya so that we can realize our eternal positions in this material world. So we're very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada came here to deliver us, to give us the actual reality, why we're here. It's not to make money. It's not to maintain ourselves opulently. It's not for just caring for our bodies and our families and our... Those things have to be there, but that is not our main goal. But we see, at least I experience, that we get so caught up in those things sometimes that we're covered, and to us it appears that it's the goal of our life, you know, just to keep these things going, just to keep going. And I know some have to, we have to have jobs, or we have to somehow or other take care of our families, but that isn't our prime goal in life. Our prime duty is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, speak about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, associate with devotees, praise him with chanting his holy names. And this gives us freedom from this Mahamaya, from this world. It keeps our intelligence in the right place to understand who is this Supreme Personality of Godhead. He starts giving us little hints of who he is and giving us some love, some love for him. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Sanatana Goswami is being instructed by Mahaprabhu, he describes Durga, and he says that just as in the light, darkness cannot be there any longer. So just like that, in Krishna's presence, this material energy of Durga cannot act upon the living entity. So he also gives a very nice prayer, and we used to say this every day with the kids before starting Gurukula, and I thought we could repeat this. And Mahaprabhu said that one is immediately freed from the clutches of Maya if he seriously and sincerely chants this. So it's a nice prayer to say. So if you want to repeat after me, we'll say, "My dear Lord Krishna, although I have forgotten you for so many long years, in this material world, today I am surrendering unto you. I am your sincere and serious servant. Please engage me in your service. My dear Lord Krishna, from this day I am yours." And Lord Chaitanya said, "It is my vow that if one seriously surrenders unto me, saying, 'My dear Lord, from this day I am yours,' and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on." So in the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada was describing how these dogs of politicians and are protecting us, but we can get away from that protection by taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. So this verse is a very nice verse to repeat every day, just to remind ourselves that today I am going to surrender to you. I am surrendering to your lotus feet. Please give me your protection. I no longer want to take protection from all of these, what did Prabhupada call them? Fallible soldiers. So no longer am I taking shelter of these fallible soldiers of my insurance plan or my government or my army and military, my mayor, the policeman, my dog outside. When I was reading that, I couldn't quit laughing because we have a dog that keeps the deer out of the garden and takes care of the cows. But as soon as one dog around the place barks, it's just like then they all start barking and barking, barking. And in India, you see that especially out in the streets, that when Prabhupada says, no one has given them the right to do this, but they take it on themselves to protect everyone by barking, barking. And so similarly, we have all of these protectors in our lives, these mundane personalities that have taken upon themselves to protect us. The government's making all new and beautiful plans to protect us from ourselves and from everyone else. And we have so many persons, but just surrendering unto Krishna and unto the lotus feet of our spiritual master, that's all protection. That's real protection. Because at the time of death, will our doctor save us? Will our government save us? Who can save us? But this chanting of the holy name, taking shelter at Krishna's lotus feet and our spiritual master's lotus feet, that is real protection. That is the protection that we're seeking, that we're wanting, that really in our hearts we're wanting. Because this, in this material world, when we come into the material world, we're covered thinking that, oh, I'm this baby. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says all the parents come, oh, so sweet, and you know, that everyone loves a baby. And so we immediately become covered that, oh, I am the supreme. I am the center of all their lives. My whole goal is to be happy here. And then as we grow, we become a bit ambitious and we want to become more of this and more of that, and there's competition with others, and we go on like this. And what does Bhaktivinoda say? I'm taking pleasure in seeing others' difficulties. You know, but this is the illusion of this material world. And it seems so real. That's the amazing thing. It's so real. Just like to these doormen. You know, their sleep was so real. And in the meantime, you know, watchmen are usually pretty on top of things. That's why they're there as watchmen. But they were so covered. They were sleeping. And here's this whole activities going on of Krishna, you know, being taken out of the room, coming back, and Vasudev coming back in the room. There must have been some time span in between there, and they never caught on to anything, and the doors just unlocking themselves and locking again. And, you know, they only awaken when the baby starts crying, you know, and that's Krishna's arrangement. So just like that for us, Krishna is there. When Srila Prabhupada left India to come to the West, so many people were saying to him, don't go, Swami, don't go. You know, you might die on the way. You'll be in the land of the fallen. You know, you'll leave Vrindavan. You should die here. You're an old man. Don't go. But Srila Prabhupada, because he knew he wasn't under the shelter of all the material energy, but under the Supreme Lord's shelter. And Krishna even proved to him when he was rowing, showing him that I'm rowing the boat, when he had his heart attacks. Then he came in a dream and showed him, I am rowing this boat. And the captain said, that was the nicest crossing we've ever had. It was so smooth. So in this way, the devotee of the Lord is under that protection. He doesn't have to worry about all these other things. He's under the protection of the Lord. And at the time of death, even he goes to another country. Or you see how Krishna made the arrangement that immediately he took Srila Prabhupada back to Vrindavan for his last bit of time. Even though he was coming to come to the West, but then he took him back. So Krishna makes all these arrangements for his devotees. And there's nothing to be afraid of. Prabhupada gave the example one time of a boy on a train with his father, and he said one time he was on the train with his father, and the ticket man came along, and he came up to Srila Prabhupada and he said, where's your ticket, little boy? Where's your ticket? And he said, I was not scared because I knew my father had my ticket. He said, and just like that, when we surrender to the Lord, we know he has our ticket. He's taking care of us. What do they say nowadays? He has your back. He's always there for protecting one. And he can do anything. He can make those watchmen fall asleep while Vasudeva goes, parts the Jamuna so that he can go through to go. Sheshanaga's protecting him from the rain. So many things Krishna can do, lifting Govardhan Hill to protect from Indra's wrath. So in that way, we can always feel protected by the Supreme Lord, whatever happens. And these things that are considered in this material world to be fabulous things that everyone's after, wealth, good spouse, intelligence, you know, good education, wealthy family, all these things, it's explained in that purport by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Those are all the binding potencies to this material world. You know, Krishna may offer this to his devotees to use in his service. But most people do not use those things in Krishna's service. They immediately delude one into thinking, oh, this is for my enjoyment. Sorry. And so one then becomes more and more entangled, especially Lakshmi. She has such an entangling propensity. If you see sometimes when there's some kind of, someone dies and leaves some legacy and it's being divided between so many family members, and suddenly family members who were friends before become arch rivals in trying to, you know, cheat someone else out of their portion or take more than what they, you know, because this wealth covers one. And you see how these big businessmen, how did they become big businessmen without cheating others and, you know, trying to get more and more and more? Right now, you look at the way the world's going and you see how this having, trying to take Lakshmi for yourself makes one into a demon. They don't care for others. They're always after getting whatever they can for themselves at the expense of all others. So we don't want to use Lakshmi for anyone but Krishna. And we want Krishna's shelter to keep our eyes open to reality. Because we, in this world, there's so many tests. And so many tests that we're given that we have to go through. And we always want to see the reality of it's a temporary place. We're here for a very short time. We're put in different situations, but our real goal is to get out of here. Not to stay, not to come back, not to try again, but to become serious and get out of this material world and go back to Godhead. And as soon as we turn to that taking shelter of Krishna, from this day I am yours, then Durga helps us to get out. Then she becomes no longer the prison, but the guide to get out of this material world. So I'll stop there. And I'll read the translation again, and then if there's any questions or comments. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King Parikshit, the doors inside and outside the house closed as before. Thereafter, the inhabitants of the house, especially the watchmen, heard the crying of the newborn child and thus awakened from their beds." Any discussion or comments or... Manamati.
You're talking about how pious deeds entangle. I was wondering what are pious deeds? The question came in my mind is when somebody gives a donation to a church or to a temple or anything like that, is that also included in a pious deed? Does that make it? Or is it the consciousness of the person who's giving it? What exactly is, or consists pious deeds?
Well, my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong, anybody, but a pious, that is a transcendental deed, giving to the Supreme Lord, somehow or other, just giving a donation to the Lord, is different from a pious deed of, you know, like you get people that give money to a charity and their name is put up and, you know, they're given all honor and, or, you know, they're giving for tax breaks. People are doing things. There's a story of King Nig And he was one that I was thinking, you know, he was doing all kinds of pious deeds. And pious deeds bring one up, obviously. You know, it's better than a thief or someone in the mode of ignorance. It's in the mode of goodness. And yet, you know, doing these pious things can keep one still. King Rig was said to have given so much in charity that it was like the sand. No one could count it. It was like the sand on the beach. And yet, his one thing that he did, that he didn't even realize he did, of giving that cow to one Brahmin, and it came back into his herd, and he gave it again to another Brahmin, that was his downfall, to the point where he had to be in a lizard body for a while. But of course, because of all of his pious credits, he got picked up by Krishna. But I think pious, you know, with the Vedas, it's called, you know, you do pious activities, and yet you're it's a mode of goodness, and yet it's still in the material realm. It's not transcendental. But I think giving to the Supreme Lord is a different thing. It's not the same as just, you know, giving to the bum on the street or, you know, taking clothes to charity. It's not that you can't give like that. Actually, one time it said that there were devotees with Srila Prabhupada walking and no one gave any charity to any of the beggars on the street. And he said, you should give something. Grihastha should give. That's our duty. But I think you're right. It is the mentality in which it's given. For is it given actually to help someone? Or is it in their spiritual life? Or is it given, like I said, tax breaks? Is it given for name and fame, to be glory, to be seen as a pious person? You know, these things just keep us bound. I am this pious person. I am... Anyone else have any thoughts on that?
From my own, I had a discourse with my niece's husband about this.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where it is, but they call it works. You can't get to heaven by works. In other words, pious activities is, you know, giving in charity, humanitarianism, stuff like that, where uh-huh. you're actually doing something material for a material reason.
Uh-huh.
Building hospitals, things like this, you know. And you expect some kind of liberation from that, you know. But it doesn't work that way. You can't get to heaven by works.
Right.
And I was trying to explain to him what devotional service was. It's transcendental. It goes beyond pious activities or works.
Right.
It's direct service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the disciplic succession through your spiritual master. So that is not at works, of course. It's not anything done in the guna of, you know, pious activities. It's not binding.
Do you think it could be sometimes? That's one question. I mean, you know, we can do things thinking that we're the doers, or that, you know, oh, look how wonderfully I've dressed the Lord, or, you know, everybody look and glorify me, or, you know, we can it can definitely be with that egoistic, oh, I'm cooking so nicely. Look how many books I've distributed today. Everyone should praise me.
Profit, adoration, distinction. Yeah.
Yeah, that still can be there, even, I guess it's not devotional service when that's there, or it's not pure devotional service. Does anybody have any thoughts on that? Pundari? No?
In the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness.
Uh-huh.
I had some, it's interesting you brought up King Nirga because, actually he did so many pious activities, but he got Krishna's...
Yeah, that's true.
He got darshan of Krishna, picked up by Krishna. So how is this? Is
yeah.
Have some insight on how, because there's also a verse that millions of births of pious activities, you can't attain Krishna.
Yeah.
But he attained Krishna somehow.
Do you think it makes, you know, like if you're planting crops, you make the ground really nice so that when you put the seeds in, they can sprout? Do you think it's a bit like that? You know, because even it says that the Cowherd boys, who knows how many pious activities they had performed to get the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I was wondering if that isn't a little bit like preparing the ground. You do pious activities and it makes one open so that if that seed does come, then, you know, it can grow nicely. I don't know. But that isn't exactly what gets us Krishna, the pious activities. Manamati.
Then it's the causeless mercy that it's not, that's not the cause.
No.
But like you said, it prepares us, the causeless mercy that, you know, King Nagar saw Krishna, or we get, you know.
Yeah. Because even if you think, isn't it that Agyata Sukriti, that's something done, but I guess that's devotional service without knowing. That gets us started on our path to Krishna consciousness. So I guess if there's someone piously giving donations and they happen to give to a devotee, or, you know, because they're pious and they're used to doing that, I guess that opens them up for getting that mercy.
I was just thinking, Srila Prabhupada, I think, described Agyata Sukriti as pious credits. So it seems like there is some connection with pious and devotion.
Yeah.
And in one sense, pious, you know, is used for mundane good acts. But those words, Agyata Sukriti, unknowingly doing devotional service, is described as pious credits, and that's what brings one to have a little Shraddha. And then, you know, all the other parts of that process continue.
Yeah, because if you see even approaching people with books or cards or chanting, or, you know, you get some people that'll walk by, you know, close their ears, they don't want to hear, or they'll, I don't want any of that. And then you get other people that are just spontaneously attracted. You know, they want to hear, they want to talk to you, they want to come to your temple. They, you know, so there must be something, and those pious activities create that softening of the soil so that they can grow in devotional service. Okay. Madam Mohan Prabhu.
I was remembering where they divided pious activities into three categories: the fruits of pious activities, the jnanakanda pious activities, and devotional service pious activities. So sometimes when we just say pious activities, we're not making the distinctions to what's favorable for advancement on that path. So in the karmakanda section, there's the pious activities that advances one and along that line. And then, of course, Bhagavatam is the Kaitava Dharma, the giving up all forms, where Krishna says, Sarva Dharma, Pratyajaya. He says, give up all this other type of trigunavish, contaminated by the modes of nature, and come to Kevala Bhakti, by the lotus feet of your spiritual master.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Just to throw, I don't know, a little monkey wrench in the whole thing, there's that story of the sparrow, purely motivated by materialistic reasoning to the ocean took her egg, so she's going to drain the ocean beak by beak. But still, because of that activity, she drew the attention of Garuda. So,
well, that's the causeless mercy of the pure devotee. And that's, I mean, when I look at my case, there are no pious activities in the past. And somehow, just by the mercy of my spiritual master, have I been put in the situation to even be able to do any kind of pious or devotional service. So that's causeless mercy. And that's what all of us can get, that causeless mercy. I mean, it's amazing when you consider, well, not all of you, but when I consider myself, I had no reason to be given this gift, you know, and somehow Prabhupada came and gave it, you know, so it's quite an amazing thing, and we're very grateful. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.